Welcome to the Sex and Relations panel meeting at ASCII Pod 2014. Each speaker will share for approximately 15 to 20 minutes on the topic. After each speaker has shared, the remaining time can be used for questions and answers. Please no vaping anywhere in the hotel, including this room. I have Angie, Amber, and Brady. They're each going to go for 15 to 20 minutes, and we'll start with Angie.
Thanks, Adam. I'm Angie, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Angie.
So I was thinking this morning, and I was like, what am I going to share about? And I try to look at my experience, because a lot of what I know about my experience is what I learned from you guys, and so I try to speak only from what has happened to me in the last 18 months of my sobriety. I came to the rooms in 2009 and I tried to get sober. I was 18 years old and I had already hit a point in my life where I was done with drugs and alcohol. They weren't working for me anymore. And I continued to come in and out of the rooms until 2013, and that's my sobriety date, is Valentine's Day 2013. What I learned coming into the rooms is like my actions had a huge effect on everyone around me. My relationships with people, my family, my brother, I caused a lot of harm in sobriety. And I was always thinking that like the world was against me, but in reality, like I was against the world, and I wanted everyone to pay for the pain that I felt in my heart. I felt very empty for a long time. Ever since I was young, I remember at like 11 years old, my mom taking me to a psych ward to put me on antidepressants because I was slitting my wrist because I was so, I had so much hate in my heart for who I was. And I carried that pain over into all my relationships with everyone in my life. I was told when I came to the rooms to stop causing my family harm. They just told me, you know, you spend all these years drinking and drugging, and it's time to start mending these relationships. And so the topic today is like sex and relations. And when I went through my fourth step inventory, there's a part sex inventory. And so we go over our sex relations with other people, and we kind of look at the behaviors and the histories that we have with other people, and we see where we fell short and what we should do instead. And the book tells us that, you know, God is our only judge. At the end of the day, we can ask others for their opinion, but what I did in early sobriety is I took on those opinions of other people, and I like became what you wanted me to be, because I was still this chameleon. Yeah. My problem is not when I'm drinking and drugging, it's when the drugs and alcohol are taken away from me, because that's when I feel the most empty. When I was more miserable. I think I was beaten into a state of desperation when I wasn't drinking and drugging. I knew that drugs and alcohol weren't working for me, but when I went like 3-4 months without any booze, that's when I felt the most miserable, and that's when I feel like I caused the most harm. And so my sponsor took me through the 12 steps, and we got to the sex inventory, and she started having me look at the behaviors, and she had me mold something called like a sex ideal. The book says we ask God to mold our ideal and become the woman that He would have me be. And so what that looked like for me is I asked God, you know, in my prayer, I said, what kind of woman would you have me be? And I had to take time to listen. And over the last 18 months, I had to consciously continue working towards that, because I continue to grow and digress in my recovery depending on the work that I'm willing and not willing to do. I do a lot of, I like to like jump into the 12 steps, and then I take a step back and I'm like, this is working, so I'm just going to take a step back, and then I rest on my laurels, and then what happens is I have an experience that teaches me something that tells me that I have alcoholism and it's progressive, chronic, and fatal, and I need to continue to work these steps. All these experiences, whether I perceive them to be good or bad, they all teach me what I need to know so that I can continue moving forward. like my relationships in the past have looked like, if you had what I needed, we were friends or we were close or I used you. And if you didn't have what I needed, then you weren't a part of my life. My relationship with my mom looked like I blamed her for a lot of my drug addiction. I have some trauma from early childhood, and I laid that on her, saying if you were a better mother to me, I wouldn't have drank the way I drank. And what I learned when I came into the rooms is, no matter what kind of trauma that I had in my life, no matter what kind of experiences, circumstances, situational things, that does not define why I drank the way I drank. I drank the way I drank because I have a phenomenon of craving that says that one is too many and a thousand is never enough. I can drink again. I know today that I have another drink in me. I just don't know if I'll ever stop again. And I almost died the last time I came into the rooms. And so when I went over my sex inventory, the book tells me if I'm sorry for what I've done and I'm willing to grow towards something greater, then I'm sure not to drink again. But if I'm not sorry and I continue to have bad motives and to treat people like crap, I will drink again. And I believe that because I came very close in sobriety, using people for what I needed. It's kind of like when you're in your addiction, I just use people for what I needed. And I got to a point where I was so miserable, and I was about 9 months sober, that, I sat down with my sponsor and I said, I feel like I'm going to drink again, and I don't want to, and I don't know what to do. And I got honest with her again. And we went through another sex inventory and another 4-step, and I had to right my wrongs again and follow it up with a 10-step. And I have to work at that every single day. I don't know. I look at my experiences it takes a lot of hard work, and I have to continue to work towards it, and I have to continue to grow towards something greater. And what I look at in my sobriety is I always think there's this mountain and I have to reach the top. And what I've learned is there's no peak. I continue to climb up this mountain, as long as I'm willing to do the work. And I'm never going to hit a point where I'm good or things are okay anymore. I know that it's going to be continuous growth, and things can get as good as I want them to get, or they can be as difficult as I want them to be. It's all in the work that I do, and sitting down with other people is where I learn more about myself, because when you share with me about your experience, I learn more about myself and the woman that God would have me be. And that is all I got. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you. Awesome.
I'm Amber, and I'm an alcoholic. I think it's really interesting that last night both of the two speakers kind of touched on this topic. It's one that's very important to me because I feel like this stuff was there prior to me ever picking up a drink, I heard somebody say before this meeting started, I'm looking for love. And I relate to that. I feel like I came out of the womb looking for love. But seeking it out in this very desperate way that wasn't normal, that was alcoholic from the get-go, And, I've always, sought out validation and from other people. I was, in my drinking, I was pretty much damaged goods, I was a very jealous, insecure person. I took hostages often in relationships, and just to give a highlight, I got in this relationship with someone who, an addict, who was honest with me from the very beginning and said, I don't do relationships, so I'm not going to commit. And that was you haven't committed yet to me. Let me just show you what I can do. It was a mission to me, And so my plan to keep this person around, this guy around, was to bring a girlfriend into the relationship, because if he had two women, why would he leave, And then when that became very, riddled with dishonesty and betrayal, addicted threesomes can. I wanted out, and I didn't, you know, I had no voice at that time. I was, you know, just this, like, this mousy alcoholic that would, I mean, I'd go from, like, being mousy to being very, like, dramatic and, you know, like, crazy. And so, like, you know, how I chose to, like, express that I wanted to get out of this relationship was trying to slip my wrist in front of them, you know? Like, those are the levels that I went to in my drinking. At one point, I can remember telling my parents that, you know, like, they were like, why are you doing this to yourself? Like, why do you keep drinking the way you do? And I was like, I just need to find somebody to love me. You know, like, that's what I thought the solution was. And I got sober, thankfully, and those glaring defects followed me into sobriety, you know? At like 9 months sober, I was in a treatment center, and I was doing pretty well, working my steps. I had a sponsor. I was on board about AA. I was loving AA. I'd met some people that I connected with, and I started having this emotional relationship with this girl in this treatment center. And my sponsor, you know, strongly suggested that I back off. And then she told, like, when I wouldn't do that, she was like, I'm telling you now, you need to back off. And it's like, well, I don't think this is going to work between us anymore. And I ended my relationship with my sponsor. This woman who had carried me through the steps had listened to a very, very lengthy fifth step that was redundant and boring and petty and supported me from day one. I was like, well, no, you know, because I'm going to do what I'm going to do. And I ended up sleeping with this girl, and she left the treatment. And I don't think that, you know, she got high, and I don't think that I put a needle in her arm or anything like that, but I didn't support her recovery in a way that was nurturing, you know? At 2 years sober, I was, sleeping with newcomers and totally justifying it. Like, you know, they're consenting adults. You know, like, what's the big deal? And I was very, very delusional. Like, I thought, I don't know. I could easily convince you of, like, why this behavior was okay, you know, or say, I know this isn't right, but, you know, and someone once told me everything after but is bullshit, you know. So I guess, you know, like, I quit sleeping with newcomers, and at about 5 years, that was a major improvement. At 5 years sober, I got involved with the brother of a person that I was already sleeping with. And this was just emotionally, mind you, which is the justification. We're, you know, nothing's really going on here. Like, but there was, you know, it's an emotional entanglement. And the scariest part of it all was, like, I could justify it to, you know, anybody, like, why it was okay. Thankfully, I was still talking to people, and I wasn't hiding it. And the more I talked to people about it, the more obvious it became that, like, this is really, really sick behavior. Like, this is drinking behavior. If this continues, you're going to drink, you know? And so, like, I hit a bottom. Like, when I had that reality hit me, it was like humility, like, socking me in the stomach, you know? Like, suddenly everything was clear. Like, that moment that you know you're an alcoholic and you can't drink ever again, not knowing you're an alcoholic. Like, it was like, wow, I am really sick and I need some help. And coincidentally, at that time, a very important person in my life had, like, she behaved a lot like I did, you know, sexually and romantically, whatever. And she had, like, she's sober and she's trying abstinence. And I'm seeing these major changes in her life, like, she's a new woman. Like, she respects herself. She's not ruled by her vagina. You know, like, and it was one of those things that, like, when she said she was going to do it, I was like, in my head, I'm going, I'd love to place bets on how long you go, you know, rather than support her in this. And instead, like, you know, one day at a time, like, she's doing this thing and the change is happening. And so I reached this bottom and I was like, I surrendered and I was like, I'm willing to do whatever, you know, I'm willing to try abstinence. And it was really scary. And it's not like, well, you know, I need sex all the time, or I need to be in a relationship or anything like that. But in my head, I was like, what if I'm not taken care of? What if the perfect person comes along and I'm doing stupid abstinence plan, you know, and like then what? And, you know, and so this person in my life was like, it's just one day at a time. You don't have to sign away your life for a year. You don't have to sign away for 6 months. One day at a time, just like, you know, how we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so that's what I did. You know, one day at a time, I trusted the process, and I did a major sex inventory where I didn't just look at relationships and sex. I looked at flirting, and I looked at the time I was working as a bartender and like my role there, like how I laugh at people's jokes that aren't funny to get money, and like how that feels kind of gross to me, you know. And I don't know, I just kind of felt like in sobriety I was not behaving in a way that was conducive to a sober woman. And so, you know, it was really interesting. I mean, like I love to dance, and I would go out with my friends dancing, and I would notice that like I'm not having a good time unless I can pull somebody's attention on me. Which is really sad. Like, bottom line is I like to dance. My friends are here. I should be having a good time, but like this thing is over here just lurking around. And so it was really eye-opening and really good for me, you know? And like, you know, I had this goal to do it for a year, and I fell off the abstinence wagon at like 6 months. And like for a minute there was all this shame that came in, you know? And then it was like, no, we're not doing that, you know? Not going there, because that, you know, is self-defeating. And I looked at what was going on in the situation, and I learned from it, you know. And you know, that's kind of how I continue to act today. Like, this is what we do in sobriety, you know. Like the 12 steps talks about practicing these principles in all our affairs. So like I can take everything that I've learned in AA and apply it to sex and relationships, you know. Mainly trusting that God is going to take care of me, that you know, I'm not gonna be left out. Like I didn't get sober to have a shitty life. Like I'm gonna have solid relationships with people in these rooms, with whoever I make an effort to have a solid relationship with, a healthy relationship with, and you know, like what ended up happening for me was. I met somebody about 5 years ago, like a totally healthy, normal person, not alcoholic. And like from the very beginning, I was able to be honest with this person. You know, when things would come up, like my feelings would get hurt, I was able to speak my truth clearly and appropriately and not be manipulative about it. Like, I'm just going to pout until you ask me what's wrong. You know, those kind of things, like... I was learning how to be a sober woman that acts rationally and soundly in relationships. And you know, I learned those things in this program. I learned those things from my sponsor, from other women, from doing four steps. You know, like, this person's a normie, but she supports me in my program. Like, she's never been jealous of AA, like, always supported me going to meetings, conferences, hanging out with my sponsees, whatever it is I need, because she knows my story, and she knows that drunk I am not the same person that she's in love with, you know. So I'm very, very grateful to this program and all the gifts it's given me. We are miracles. If you're in this room, you're a miracle, you know. And I believe we deserve a good life. I believe we deserve love. Sometimes that's on God's time and not ours, and we just have to wait it out and be patient and learn the hard lessons as they come along. That's all I've got.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Brady. I'm an alcoholic.
I'm Brady. Brady. Hey.
My sobriety day is October 13th, 2006. I have never been on a sex and relationships panel before. But I've been asked to speak at young people's meetings before, just like little 15-minute leads, and I would always go right to the sexual inventory, you know, and talk about that stuff. Nobody likes to talk about that, like, in a public forum.
Right.
Sorry, my phone's talking right now. So, but yeah, I got sober at 18. Before I got sober, like relationships, I was really awkward. Like I was always very social person. I grew up in the like restaurant business, bars and bar and grill type places. So I was always very social and very loud, you know, and I could do like social stuff very easily. But when it came to like intimate relationships, especially with attractive females, I was like, I would get beet red and I would just like get choked up and I couldn't do that very well. So I didn't have very many, actual relationships, you know, until I got sober. What looked like one night stands mostly. About 6 weeks to like 2 months before my last drunk, I actually got into like my first girlfriend relationship, and that ended. I went to rehab, and that ended because they were like, "Oh, well, you shouldn't be in a relationship when you get sober." I'm like, "Yes," and I bailed on that. I didn't want to do that anyway. I was not emotionally available when I got into it. I was, you know, and for a while, I was like the one that got away, you know. But so many that got away because I chased them away for a long time. I've been in a lot of dysfunctional relationships, and that's because I was dysfunctional, you know. And I usually was attracted to other people that were dysfunctional as well. I drank, I got high, I did all that. I didn't do relationships. I did a lot of one night stands. I lost my virginity in a blackout, and then I got sober. I ended up in rehab, you know. Got into a little bit of trouble, you know, with jail and stuff, and I didn't have to go to jail, but I went to rehab to stay out of jail, and I went to a halfway house after that, and they were like, "Well, you can't talk to girls for like a year, you know, stay out of relationships," and I'm like, "That's a really good idea," and so that wasn't hard for me, because I was super awkward, and didn't like being, like, outgoing and emotional, and you know, putting myself out there, especially when it came to young, attractive females. So that was not hard for me. It wasn't because I was really good at working the steps and like really on my game spiritually, you know, for that first year. It was just because I was scared, I was fearful, and it was way easier to not participate in that stuff. I made it to about 10 months sober, and then I went out and I didn't do it right. I didn't get into a really meaningful relationship. It was another one night stand to end my 10 months of abstinence. But that was when I started to learn about sex and relationships and sobriety. And that's a lie. I started to learn about relationships and sobriety with my first men's home group. It was a wanderer group where we'd go eat dinner at guys' houses and have a meeting afterwards. And I was super grateful for that. That was in the halfway house I was living at. They would come in, and then we would go out, and they would bring all these dudes from this halfway house, like felons, you know, guys like the guy I was, so I used to be before I got sober, who would steal shit and, you know, not be appropriate. And they used to bring us into their homes and feed us, you know, and have a meeting. And that was great. There was really a milestone in my sobriety being involved with a group like that. But that's where I really started to develop, like, being honest with men and being in relationships with people and like talking about emotions and talking about what was going on with me and like going through the steps. And you know, that's where my life really started to change. It was amazing. But after that, I moved back in with my parents. I was like, you know, 19 years old. Moved back in with my parents, went and tore it up with my old crew, my old, like, you know, homies that I used to drink with. And that's when I got to be the DD, and I was still going to meetings and like pretending to be a big shot when I was almost a year sober. And you know, that obviously it was like, I was one of those moments, those milestones that I remember. There was a guy at the Alamo Club I would go to, he was like, "So when are you gonna really start getting sober?" And that like hit my cut right through my ego, right? And I was like, "Who are you?" Like, but I respect you, and you're saying this, and like it cut through me. So that's when I started looking at myself. I'm like, like what I was doing. And that's when I stopped doing the DD and like, you know, trying to have these like one night relationships with these, you know, normies, which a lot of them were normies. But anyway, I found the first like groundbreaking relationship I got into, it was this. I was about 21 years old. She was about 28, 29 years old. And she was a mess. I had a few years sober, but I was still, you know, I was young and crazy and dumb. But, you know, it started off as like a friendship, you know, hanging out, watching TV together. It was totally just, you know, like innocent. And until it crossed over to not being innocent. And we started having sex. And it became an intimate relationship. And, you know, I thought she was my girlfriend, but she didn't really think I was her boyfriend. I didn't know that. But she was like claiming to have a few months sober, but didn't actually have any sobriety, and was like in and out and all over the place. And that was really, like I said, groundbreaking. You know, it challenged me in a lot of ways that I didn't know that I was going to be challenged, and made me, you know, go through a lot of stuff. I ended up finally like breaking up with her, telling her, you know, we were done. Like a week later, she was in the hospital and needed me to come, you know, see her. And she ended up having a miscarriage in the hospital. And that was like, oh man, I'd never cried that much in my life. I sobbed for like 24 hours straight. I got in a fight with my dad later that day because he was like, what's wrong with you? And I was like, fuck you, Dad. It was tough. But, you know, groundbreaking. You know, I went through, you know, a lot of emotions through that. And, you know, I realized some mistakes that I made, you know, getting into a relationship like that. But I didn't know any better. I was doing the best I could with what I had at the time, you know. So did I 13-step her? No, I don't really think so. My one, like, sponsor who I was with him for, like, 6 years. I've had a few other sponsors other than that. But he defined 13-stepping as sleeping with somebody who, or having relations with someone who is sicker than you. But if it's kind of like, doesn't really make sense, right? Because if I'm having sex with somebody that I know is sicker than me, I'm probably sicker than them.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It really doesn't make sense. And that's the 13th step in a nutshell in my world. It doesn't make sense. You know, it's not right. It's not okay. But I mean, that was rough. But that woman is actually back in sobriety and trying to, you know, get her life straightened out today, which is awesome. But there's been a few other relationships that, you know, have happened throughout my sobriety. I've dated a couple girls in between the next groundbreaking one, and I tried to do those as healthy as I could. And what it comes down to is, you know, I try to bring the best me that I could into a relationship. You know, and then I would, in that relationship, be challenged in ways that, you know, emotionally, that I didn't know how to handle. And I would have to go back to my home group, go back to my sponsor, go back to the newcomers and work a program, you know, work on myself and then go back to that relationship. I've struggled with obsession, you know, over, I don't want to say a woman. I thought it was a woman at the time, but it was really like the idea of what that woman could be for me, you know. And that was like, I just did that a couple years ago, and it was a normie, and I fell for this girl, and you know, it was like it wasn't even love, you know. I thought it was love. That's what I thought love was supposed to be. And I was just completely obsessed with what I thought she was for me, you know. And it was really difficult going through that, because she was like pretty well-rounded and like, oh, well, like, yeah, we can do this for a while, but then I'm going back to where I came from, and, you know, I'm only going to be here a few months. And I'm like, yeah, 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 but we're together right now. And that's all I heard. And I was completely obsessed with her. And, you know, I saw myself being sick and not working my program, and I didn't care. I really didn't care. Like, I bailed on a few of my friends through some stuff they were going through, and I told them, I was like, I really want to be here for you right now, but I can't. I got to go over here and do this. You know, I was sick. I was completely, like, it was a thought that overrode all other thoughts, and I didn't know what to do. You know, I'm lucky that I didn't have to drink. You know, I can't tell you why, other than God's grace, but that's the only reason I'm sober today anyway, right? It's a relationship with God. So I'm lucky I made it out of that without picking up a drink. And, you know, I didn't get, you know, I inventoried that relationship and I inventoried myself and over and over and over again after that last, that relationship, which was like a couple of years ago. And I ended up, you know, not being really excited about where my life was at that time. And that, you know, that changed something in me emotionally, spiritually. And I ended up going on, you know, a trip. I left Illinois, ended up in Flagstaff. I lived there for 6 months, went to Prescott, lived there for 6 months. This is a period of abstinence. You know, I was like working on me and, you know, on a little spiritual journey. And, you know, I really made sure before I left that I wasn't running from myself, you know, because I knew I couldn't get away from myself, because I've run from myself before. But I ended up just going on a road trip for a while, sticking in a few places for like 6 months each, and went to San Francisco for 6 months. I tried another relationship there with somebody that I'd been friends with for like 4 years, and that was like one of the most like honest relationships I've been in. It was only lasted for about a month, but it was really awesome. You know, and it didn't revolve around anything unhealthy, and you know, we both love sobriety and love life and love, and it was really cool. You know, and today I am in a relationship which is, it has been challenging. I've only been, you know, dating this beautiful girl for about 3 months, and it's been very challenging. Brought up a lot of stuff, you know, for both of us to go work on in our own corners and then try to come back to the relationship and be healthy. So it's really awesome, though, that I get to do that, that I get to bring, you know, a healthy self into a relationship, you know, and not work the other person's program and not become obsessed with an idea of something that, you know, think I'm chasing, you know, and rely on God rather than trying to rely on somebody else and make them responsible for my happiness, you know, because that'll never happen. You know, so, I don't know, my sexual ideals have changed almost daily over the past, you know, 7 years since I've been sober. You know, I haven't written them down in a long time, but I could probably do that because it's nice to write them down and look at them on paper every once in a while. But I've tried so much different stuff in sobriety, you know, in relationships, outside of relationships, and just to make sure that I'm not missing out on anything, you know, because that FOMO that I've chased around, fear of missing out, you know, it's made me do a lot of dumb things. But it's gotten me into a lot of, you know, groundbreaking things, challenging things. So, I don't know, when I was asked to speak on this panel, and like I came and saw like some of my friends that I knew from Prescott, and they were like, "Who put them on their sex relationships panel?" They like laughed at me. And I was like, "I don't know, they're out of here. Somebody's crazy." You know, I was supposed to be on like a 1-2-3 panel, and they switched me to this. But whatever, everything happens the way God planned it. So I'm just grateful that I got to be here, and you know, I'm still sober, even though I've screwed most things up, done most things the wrong way before figuring out how to do them the right way. So I'm really glad to be here and, you know, be hanging out with all you guys. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'm Adam and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you for you guys sharing your experience here. We have quite a bit of time, about an hour. We could open it up to questions, comments, if anybody has anything they feel like they need to share or anything that they want to ask our speakers about, we can do that now.
Greg, alcoholic.
Hey, Greg.
So what was your guys' experience like with dating normies? Well, normies, whatever, or alcoholics without a solution, whatever you want to call them. Depends on which one they are.
Brady, an alcoholic.
Brady.
Dating non-alcoholics, people that don't participate in AA. or to any other 12-step programs. It's different. I've dated mostly within Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's so easy to connect with that person right away because they already know what your lifestyle, and I've always been into conferences and going to meetings all the time, and really involved in AA, so it makes things a little bit easier for me, because I can be like, oh, I'm going to a meeting, I can bring them with me, or I can not bring them with me. We can go to roundups, and they don't have to really be like babysitting the whole time and like making sure they're comfortable and okay. So I don't know, it's easier in that respect. But with normies, I found that normies, not alcoholics, they're not like, a lot of people say, oh, well, they're not sick. They're not sick alcoholics, sick spiritually, which is not true in my experience. I've found plenty of non-alcoholic people that are just as sick as the people in these rooms. So, yeah. But I think it's completely conditional as well. But anything else?
I'm Amber, and I'm an alcoholic.
My
experience has been really good. I'll hear in meetings a lot of times that, people outside these rooms don't understand this. And, yes and no. I kind of think it's pretty egocentric to say, other people can't look at our program and go, yeah, I see what you guys are doing here. I mean, the woman I'm with now, early on in the relationship, I explained, my recovery and what we do in AA, and she was like, makes a lot of sense. That's a pretty practical program. I can see why that works. And I was like, awesome. I don't have this fear for going out. I'll say that. I've connected with people in this program, and that's been great, but you always run that risk. I've seen people that have had kids in this program, and, one of the people in the relationship goes out, and it's kind of terrifying, but those are the risks we take is, loving people in AA, regardless of whether we're romantically involved or not. But my experience has been really good, there are good people out there that aren't in AA,
I'm Angie. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Angie.
I have not dated anyone that's normal in sobriety, but what came to mind is that I have a lot of normal friends, and from my experience with being friends with people that are normal, I learned that I have really high expectations for people that are in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, that you had to work your 12 steps, and if you weren't, you couldn't be my friend. And so I had this experience that told me that I can't judge my friends based on the program that they work, because God is taking them through the steps as He should have them go through the steps, and that's not up to me and my decisions. So what I learned is to not be so hard on people, and it's usually a reflection of how hard I am on myself. But I kind of learned that I have to take people for what they are, and it's not based on how hard they work or how hard they don't work. So that's kind of what I thought of when you had that question.
Thanks, guys.
Mia. So when I was out, I attracted just extremely horrible people. I was just used, and it was all fleeting, and it was really, really bad. And I've taken over a year of the abstinence thing, and it's been absolutely incredible. And I found recently that I'm attracting incredible people, and I don't know how to do that. And it's almost like I'm only used to being treated that way, and transition. I've attracted just these people that it's oh my gosh, I didn't even know you existed in the world, and I shut them out to an extent, and I just kind of walk away from it and put up this maybe I'm not worthy. I don't really know what it is, but I don't know if maybe you have an experience of that transition. I feel like I was in two separate extremes, and I don't know how to get into that middle.
I'm Amber, and I'm an alcoholic. I didn't have that experience, but I would think if you were my sponsee, I would say it sounds like there's another layer of fear there that needs to be uncovered. some writing and prayer is probably involved.
I'm Angie. I'm an alcoholic. I have a lot of experience where I was always like seeking punishment in sobriety or pain or chaos, and I surrounded myself with people that were like that. And so when I started experiencing like the gifts of this program or the light, I realized I was more afraid of things getting good than I was of being in the chaos or the pain of experiences in sobriety. And so what happened is I realized that, like I kind of shared about this earlier, but things can get as good as I want them to be, but I have to let them be good. You know, I have to experience them as they are and kind of like take things in and soak them in and just be like, okay, this is what it is now. And I had to take a step back from myself and kind of do some reflecting and be like, all right, I'm like seeking this punishment in sobriety, but like, what do I want out of life? And so I started being grateful for the things that I had in my life and doing like a lot of inventory and working with a lot of newcomers. And that's really helped me.
Okay.
My history of being in relationships was all about low self-esteem, and I deserved to be a victim in all the domestic violence stuff over the years. And until I got sober and got into the rooms and did some internal changing, I was always attracting those people who were stepping on me, using me, abusing me. So once I got out of the room and I did some internal changes within myself, then I attracted people who didn't treat me that way. And I had good relationships. And I met my husband that way. I mean, I stopped looking, you know, at, you know, I was 48. Never been married. And I was happy the way I was and with my life the way it was and my sobriety and my cluster of friends and male friends and female friends. And when I stopped looking, my husband came along and God put him in my life, and he's a good man. He doesn't do all those addictive behaviors, but he does do Al-Anon, because me being an alcoholic, he has to be Al-Anon, because I can't work with somebody or be with somebody that's not working some kind of 12-step program, because he does have issues, but he hasn't identified exactly what they are. So, thank God for that. But, yeah, I always felt like I deserved all that. You know, my low self-esteem and low self-worth, and I don't deserve better than that, and, you know, attracting that energy to me. So, I had to do the changing myself before God would give me someone who was loving, kind, generous, all those things that my husband is. And I had to wait a long time, 50 years old, you know? But what a gift this program is, that, you know, whatever my desires are and God desires me to do, I can have that, because I'm not blocking somebody's spirit. You know, I'm open to those things. And like, was it Melissa or Chris that said last night about, or was it the leader? What was her name? She said something about, this program is for anyone who wants, who needs to grow spiritually. It's not just for young people. And I, you know, I feel like I'm just a toddler in this program. There's so much to learn, so much to do. And the gifts that this program provides are just endless. Just endless. That's all I got.
Thank you. I'm Taylor. I'm an alcoholic.
And Taylor.
So I grew up with a pretty abusive childhood. And so growing up, it's kind of all I knew. So it's like when guys wouldn't yell at me or like, stuff like that, I'd be like, what's wrong with you? Not like yell at me, but like if they were too nice to you, I'm like, that's so unattractive. But it's like, that's not. And it took me a long time to learn that. It's funny you said that you'd like were never in a relationship. Like all I've ever been in is a relationship. Like since I was 15. Like, this is my first time being single, like, longer than a month. Like, I don't know. I just, I'm like a, I don't know what's wrong with me. I mean, like, long-term relationships and not, like, just relationships. But I don't know. Like, I had this boyfriend when I was in stuck. I was doing heroin, but and drinking. He hated when I drank, and he was so controlling and so insecure and so mean to me. And I'm like, oh, he cares. Like, he cares so much about me. And it's like, now that, like, I'm out of it and, like, after detox and everything, I was just like, that's so fucking sick. Like, that I can sit there and, like, think just because someone controls me, that, like, watches over my phone and everything, that that's okay, and, like, when it's really not. So I'm still working. I'm pretty codependent, obviously. So I'm trying to get past that. I really don't know great about it, all that stuff, but it's pretty hard. I just always feel like I, like, if I don't have someone there or I need that validation, like, I don't know. I'm still really fucked up. I've messed up. Yeah, I don't know. I just feel like talking, so thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Sarah, I'm an alcoholic.
Sarah.
So, I'm just in my third month of sobriety, and so I've never been, like, healthier or happier in my life, and pretty often, I have been married for 3 years, and I've been married by Timothy X. for 6 years. And getting sober is what made me realize that I was in a very toxic, codependent relationship. That really, right now, wasn't repairable. And so I am, a couple months, 2 months after getting sober, I filed for divorce. And I noticed they don't make decisions like that in your first year of sobriety. And I was put in a position where I had to get courts involved. Otherwise, you get taken away by kids. You know, I could take the kids when you're sober. Like, I didn't take away the kids when I wasn't. So I know from the bottom of my heart that I made the right decision, and that this is the path my life is meant to go on. That being said, like, the attacks keep coming, and so I have developed a friendship with a male from rehab that has kind of turned into my support system, and everyone says, don't do that, and I believe there's a reason for it. I'm struggling because at the same time I've now found this person in my eyes that is a person to me that I've never experienced before. So I'm sure, like, I don't even have the guts to tell my sponsor about this friend, because I know what everyone's going to say, right? I mean, don't do it. There's a reason that you don't do it. And I'm not even close to being divorced yet. Like, this is going to go on for years. So I don't know if you, I sound like maybe you guys have experienced something similar, like me with sobriety. Obviously, maybe not with the whole divorce. But I don't know. I just want someone to say it's okay, and I know you're probably not. I've always been a very independent person, which is why this codependent marriage that I was in was never going to work. I'm a very independent person. I was never going to be. And I don't know that I'll ever learn to meet someone halfway. I don't know that I'll ever learn to be, like, in this partnership. I'm trying to learn how to do that, and hopefully hear the best of that person, but it's just hard because I feel things now that people tell me that aren't real. But, like, I feel them. So how do I know they're not real? I'm not making any sense. I'm, like, asking questions without really asking questions. Because I don't know.
I've got some experience. I'm Brady. I'm an alcoholic.
Great.
It took me a long time of working the steps and building a relationship with God and then building a relationship with myself until I could trust myself, and trust my relationship with God to inspire me to make the correct decisions. So I'm grateful that I had sponsorship in that home group to tell me that you can't trust yourself, because in those, you know, first months of sobriety, I was so delusional. You know, I thought that I was like on point, and I'm like, my sponsor's like, don't make amends to that girl, and I'm like, yeah, but my intentions are so pure. Yeah. Right. No, he's like, don't do it. Your amends to that girl, so leave her alone. And I'm like, no. You don't understand. I went and did it, and it just came out like, oh, let me make it up to you, please, you know, and I was so full of shit. I didn't know it. So that, you know, I'm really grateful for the sponsorship and home group that I had to keep me away from the, you know, give me the advice that I needed, and not, you know, they just told me, you can't trust yourself, you know. Let us, as a group conscious, make these decisions for you, because you are not capable of making decisions in your own best interest. You know? And that was the case for me. You know, that's my experience.
I'm Amber and I'm an alcoholic. Yeah. I thought there was something really telling in what was just spoken, that I don't want to tell my sponsor. Like, if I can't be as honest with this person that I have, like, you know, committed to being honest with, bottom line, like, throughout the big book, it's like thoroughness and honesty. If I can't be honest with that person, then I'm fearing judgment, I'm fearing myself, my actions, the behaviors that I want to do, like, I don't know. The other thing is, like, sometimes we're just not ready to do the right thing until we go through a lot of pain. You know? Like, everyone, and you know, could have, you know, there's all these, like, suggestions on how to go through, you know, your first few years of sobriety and do it in a way that is graceful, you know? And most of us don't do that. You know? Like, we go, that's pretty and nice for you, but I'm going to test the waters. And so sometimes we just have to misbehave and get burned and then say, okay, that's not working anymore. And it's a lot like drinking. You know, we're not ready until we're ready. And in the meantime, like, if there's something in my gut that's screaming at me, like, I'm kind of thinking this is wrong, then I can pray for the willingness, you know. I can pray for the willingness to do the right thing. Like, if my gut is saying, like, I probably should find some people who are really going to support my sobriety in a way that, you know, doesn't potentially involve something sexual or romantic, then, you know, I can find those people, you know. Like, help me find those people. Help me to gravitate towards what is healthy, you know. We don't always do it, but hopefully we learn from it.
I put, I've got 11 years of sobriety, and I put myself in treatment here in Prescott. And then 45 days later, I was like, I'm ready to go back up. So, my MO was to find a man that could take care of me, and I knew that as soon as, you know, with 45 days of sobriety, there was no way I could get back out there by myself. So I put myself in an all-women's recovery house for 8 months here in Prescott, and I got challenged once again because that's when I came out of problem. So that didn't work too well. My sponsor continued to tell me, don't trust yourself, don't get into a relationship, get a plant first, you're going to be better life. And maybe you'll be okay, but it has to be, you know, at least a year of sobriety. And by about a year and a half of sobriety, I was so busy, you know, putting myself back in school because I didn't know how to take care of myself. I always had somebody else to take care of me. And I would totally get enmeshed in that person, and I was lost. You know, I had no life. I had their life. My first two kids, I actually gave to their father when I went into treatment. And, you know, I was working on getting an education, another education, so that I could support myself. And, you know, went through the whole supervised education, you know, all the humiliation that went along with that. You know, because I was sober now, I should be able to, you know, be safe with my kids. But, you know, that's not what I had heard from the child. So it was a long road. honestly, it wasn't because I wasn't looking, but I don't think I actually got into relationships until about 3 years of sobriety. And that was with somebody who had a year. Big mistake. I had to do the steps many times. Thank God I had a sponsor who was very blunt and very honest and would call me on all my shit, no matter what. And it took me, I've been in a relationship with my partner now for almost 7 years, and it's the first healthy relationship that, you know, I've been in and I never thought I would be in. And I still go back to that. Thank God I've never had the urge to go back out, you know. And she's not an alcoholic or an addict, but I guess she's called me Normie. But it's taken me a long road, and I'm still in the process of getting a degree and, you know, all that fun stuff. But relationships take up so much of your energy and your thoughts and your emotions. And when you're trying to get your life back on track and you have kids involved, it's just too much. It was too much for me. I wish you all the luck, you know, with people who are in your recovery of relationships. Just keep hanging in there and do it one day at a time. Listen to your sponsor and work the steps.
I'm sorry. I'm
sorry.
You know, I'm an addict.
Yeah.
Everything. Yeah, ever since with her, ever since I was like 13 years old, I've been in like yearly long relationships with only like a month or two in between. Every time I'd end a relationship, I'd sit there and be like, I'm not going to date for a year or 2 years. That never happened because another relationship would be right in my face like a month later. And I'd never say no. So they were all super dependent relationships. I didn't know how to be my own person because I'd always have to make decisions based upon how the other person felt or what they were doing. Or I couldn't go hang out with my friends when I wanted to because it wasn't okay with them. So I didn't have like my own life. I pretty much revolved around their life because they couldn't be okay without me. And I was always financially dependent on them. And I just got out of 2 really bad relationships in the last 3 years. And it just made me realize a lot. And I've finally been able to become my own person and feel comfortable with who I am as an individual for the first time in my life. So it feels pretty good. Yet I'm in another relationship. But I'm taking it super slow, and he's in recovery too. So we like respect where each other is in recovery, and we don't destruct our own lives or plans based upon what the other one's trying to do. So I'm a little worried about that. Just being in a relationship, because today is only my 60th day. But I don't know, like, I'm taking it super slow, not getting too serious about it, and just seeing how it goes. So hopefully it doesn't like turn out about me now. That's what usually my decisions do. That'll pass.
I have a question. You can ask questions, right?
Yes.
Okay. I guess I can do this. My first sponsor and the sponsor I have now, every time I've done sex inventories, they've had me not only do it on the people I've been in intimate relationships with, but also like with my family and my friends. And when I was around, I mean, not like not the questions that pertain specifically to the act of sex, but the other questions. But when I was around 3 years sober, I realized that a pattern of mine was the same in my friendships as it was with the relationships I was getting in with men. And I was just wondering if any of you had like had a similar experience where you just see similar behavior. behaviors or patterns in friendships as well as also with intimate people that you have relationships with, because I think that especially being young, we tend to look at just the sex relationship and we don't actually look at like how we're interacting with our friendships and that our character defects are very similar. Like for me, I've always played the victim and I've always allowed people to walk over me, and I've gone to people in friendships and in intimate relationships that have treated me poorly and I've allowed them to. And so I was just wondering if any of you had a, not a similar experience, but an experience with that.
I'm Ann Jim, an alcoholic. Something I noticed with my friendships and my relationships with like a significant other is that I'm always leaving right before things get really deep, because I'm afraid of like putting in that work to maintain a relationship. I've always left before things got close or before things got too deep. And what I learned is like my relationship with my family, my significant other, and my friends, like if I'm doing the book to the best of my abilities and the 12 steps, that I'm treating everyone the same regardless of who they are in my life. I don't do that all the time. But I have to have these experiences that teaches me something and these challenges. And I look at like my brother when he was going through this growth spurt, like his knees hurt really bad and his, you know, his joints hurt and he was in all this pain. And I look at like these spiritual experiences that I have in my life and he's like, he was going through all this pain, but within a short period of time, he kind of grew and he flourished and he got really tall and handsome, and he was taller than me at this point. And that's kind of like how a spiritual experience happens in my life, is like, it's painful at first and then I grow from it and then I flourish and I become something different. I don't know if that answered your question, but I hope it did.
I'm Amber and I'm an alcoholic. I can be codependent in any relationship. My best friend slash roommate for a few years in sobriety, you know, when she told me she wanted to move to a different place to pursue a career that, you know, was more suitable to her, I really felt like she was leaving me, and how dare she, and you know, like I was not supportive of her in those actions and those decisions, you know, like I was just thinking about that page in the 12 and 12. It's in the 12th step. I think it's like 144. It's like the relationship page. If you've read it, then you probably highlighted the whole thing. If you haven't read it, go in search of it. But it talks about when we lean too heavily on others, you know, when we rely too heavily on others, like they ultimately disappoint us, or we disappoint them, or we control people, those kind of things. And I can see that working in many relationships, you know, like it's my goal to not be that person, but you know, like anything else, sometimes we have to get burned, and we have to see how we're affecting other people and hurting other people in order to behave in a way that I think, you know, God wants me to behave, you know.
That's it. I'm Brady, and I'm Holly.
Brady.
I think I have a little bit of like the opposite of an experience. I'll treat a girlfriend like the exact opposite. Not the exact opposite of a friend, but extremely different. And I'm like, I don't know, I've learned how to be really good at friendship. You know, I'll brag about that all day long. Like, friendship rocks. You know, treating my significant other like a best friend, or like one of my best homies, is something I really want to do. That's like, that's a relationship I really want to have, is like, you know, my best friend be my significant other. So that's something I keep in mind and try to be mindful of, is, you know, treating my significant other like one of my best homies, because I've learned how to be really good friends with men in sobriety. And then after I did that with women in sobriety, you know, but then bringing sex into that relationship changes things drastically, as we all know. So yeah, that's one thing I'm trying to be mindful of, you know, with my current relationship, is bringing like that real friendship bond into it, you know, and then the rest as well. So, thanks.
Thank you, Brady.
I'm Molly.
Hey, Molly.
So I guess this kind of sweet relationship. So I've been in treatment for about 6 months now, and I still don't feel like I found like my higher power. And I was just wondering, like, how you really know when you have a relationship with your higher power? Because I know that, you know, you kind of need a relationship with a higher power before you get a relationship with anybody else.
I'm Amber and I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah.
There's a line in the book that says something like, God does not make too hard terms with those who seek him. And that's been my experience. Like, I came into this program incredibly desperate, beaten down, and ready. I mean, like, if you had said, eat, you know, disgusting moldy cheese, I'd say, bring it on. Like, whatever, I'll eat dog shit if you need me to feel better. And so, like, when the God stuff came into play, like, I was pretty resistant because I grew up in a home that was very religious, and a lot of those beliefs conflicted with beliefs I've had, you know, most of my life. And yet I just decided, like, you know, whatever got me here, whatever got me to this moment of being willing to try recovery, being willing to believe in the hope that I was, you know, deserving of a sober life, you know, those kind of things. Like, one of my favorite topics in recovery is like that shift that we have, you know, like there's one day that you're out there and you are just fixated on alcohol, drugs, whatever your poison, and that's all you can think about and that's all you want, and then something happens and suddenly you want to be sober. Like, you don't know how it's going to happen or any of that, but like that moment, and that moment to me is just a total God shot, you know, like that's that grace, like that little bit of opening where I have to come in and like be willing to take some action, you know? And so like, I don't make a big fuss about the God stuff. I look at that. I look at the ways that God's carried me, and I just like, I trust in those things, you know? And it's worked for me. And I think you're totally right. Like, you know, we have to have that relationship in place first, you know, because that relationship is what's going to keep me sober, you know. If I'm not sober, I'm no good to anybody.
I'm Brady, I'm an alcoholic.
Brady.
I had a lot of resentments about what I thought God was when I came in. It was really just old ideas, you know. I associated, like, my higher power with people that were supposed to represent God, you know, and I had to let go of those old ideas, and that took open-mindedness, and I didn't have it when I first walked in, but somehow it came, you know, and I was able to let go of some of those old ideas and open my mind up a little bit to, like, what a higher power could be. And one of the things, I hated that word God when I saw it in the big book. So somebody was like, well, why don't you use an acronym like good orderly direction or a group of drunks? And when I came into an AA meeting and I saw all these people that were an alcoholic like me or worse, mostly worse, because I got sober at 18. And I didn't see that series of bottom, straight up. But I saw these people and they were like happy. They were free. And I wanted that. I was like, if these people, you know, that are like this and they're telling me stories, like, I know that they know what they're talking about. If they can accomplish this, whatever they're doing is working. And that came, that like, was a little bit of faith, you know. I was willing to believe in whatever they believed in. I didn't know what it was. And then it just took practice. It took walking through the steps, you know. I trusted them. I trusted what they were doing. And eventually, they gave me a faith that was, like, unshakable today. So, it's really amazing. But just give it a shot. You know, it sounds like your mind is a little bit open, at least. So, just give it a shot if you're willing to believe.
That's great.
I'm Angie. I'm an alcoholic.
Angie.
I heard you use the word how in your question, and if I break that down, it tells me honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness, and if I bring that into my 12 steps, that's how I find my relationship with my higher power, and I've spent a long time trying to figure out what God was and trying to intellectualize things, and I like to think that I'm kind of book smart, so I like to learn. I like equations. I like solutions to problems and stuff like that. So I was always trying to figure out what God was in a substance in my life and how that was going to work for me. And then I realized that it's just not something that I'm going to ever figure out. I've seen it work for me in my life, and it's usually when I'm detaching from results, because I like to figure out the outcome of everything that's going to happen, and I just can't do that. And so it's when I go into something with an open mind, and I take that action, that willingness, to move forward in something that I don't know, how it's going to turn out. That's how I watch God, like, intervene in my life. And then I get to reflect and be like, oh yeah, you know, like that one time I had this experience and I learned that one thing that, like, changed my life forever. That's how I see Him working in my life.
Jared, I'll come on.
Jared.
I guess for me, I'm like a little bit over 1 year of sobriety now. And like, for me, how would you suggest for somebody that's, I know I'm not ready. And I've done a couple of beer inventories and stuff like that with my sponsor. But, you know, I have that feeling of still, with even connecting with like friends at times, of, you know, the best way I can describe it is like, I'm in the 8th grade dance. Split up and I'm on the other side. I want to talk about this, but I just can't. What would you suggest?
Wait, can you repeat the question?
Like I have that feeling like about my 8th grade dance. Like I never really grew up since adolescence. And I'm like, I'm 32 now, and I want to just like, you know, open up more. And like, it feels still awkward, you know, that you were talking about that point.
Yeah, awkwardness. I can totally relate to that. I've had to just, you know, It's nice having like a fellowship around you, you know, building up that fellowship, finding some friends, but just walking through it, you know, getting up, finding the courage to just walk through it, you know, and pray and ask God for the courage, you know, get out of the comfort zone, you know, staying in that big, comfy, warm, stinky pile of shit is really comfortable for me. You know, because I'm there, I've been there, like, that's great, but I gotta get out of it, you know, and I gotta go feel what it's like, to just jump. Then I might fall, I probably fall, I usually fall on my face, you know, but it's okay, because I can get back up, you know, it's all good. It's really just walking through it for me, you know, giving it a shot. Like, I had to learn how to dance in sobriety. Yeah, that sounds.
You danced so much. That was so.
I have a blast today. I love to dance, but I had to learn how to do that sober because I didn't do that when I was drinking. Like, I'd stand there and kind of like wave back and forth a little bit. You know? I wouldn't move my feet though, but like I threw myself out there, and a girl was like, "Hey, let me show you how to move your feet." You know, and I just walked through it. And I was embarrassed, and my face was always beat red. But you know, it gets easier when you throw yourself out there.
Thanks. Amber Alcoholic. I think it's important to remember that we're all awkward. You know, like, I don't know how it is for, maybe it's just me, but I think like these kind of like big social situations are like really daunting to me. You know, like just being thrown in with tons of people you don't know and trying to communicate, you know, like all of that's really awkward. But I think that's just kind of the human experience, you know, like we're trying to connect with each other. Sometimes we have the words, sometimes we don't. We just do the best we can, you know?
I'm Angie, I'm an alcoholic. In early sobriety, I kept going around telling everyone, like, I will grow out this awkwardness, don't worry, just bear with me. And I kept saying, like, I know I'm weird, and I have these weird, quirky jokes and stuff like that, but I swear I'll change. And someone told me, they're like, what if you never outgrow these behaviors? Like, what if this is just who you are? And it kind of made me think a little bit, and I started to embrace these weird behaviors that I had, this adolescent childlike feelings, or the awkwardness, or the weirdness. Like, I have a very weird sense of humor, and not everyone understands it, but I started to embrace who I was, and that I became more comfortable in, like, life, and life on life's terms. And it's been weird. I don't always like everything about me, but I've learned to love me when I'm high and, or not high, when I'm when I'm up and when I'm down, if that makes sense. Like, when I'm down and out, I don't love myself. I judge myself. And so I've learned to kind of like take a step back and be like, if I'm going to do this 12-step AA thing, like, I gotta love me when I'm in my character defects, when I'm down and out. Like, that's really important to me, just as much as like loving me when I'm excelling or accomplishing things. So that's what I got.
Thanks, Andrew. All right, I'm Adam, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Adam.
I just want to thank the panelists, one, for sharing your guys' experiences. Anybody else that was in here that shared things, about 15 minutes. I'm just going to share a real tiny bit before we close. The reason that I came to this panel, and I think maybe that's possible for everybody in this room, right, is like, I need help there. I'm not good at it. I am a big problem when it comes down to this stuff. So I spent about 6 years in Alcoholics Anonymous thinking that I was kind of doing all the right things, sort of acting the part, having the sponsors and going to the meetings and working the steps, sort of, and, you know, like 1 through 9, kind of, and then I balked and moved right to 12, and then just didn't do a whole lot for a while besides work, and all I know is I've had this desire, this thing inside me since I was about 5 years old, and probably the first experience is like kindergarten playground, you know, and her name was Jessica, and she was tall and beautiful and blonde, and she, you know, she had everything that I wanted, and I kind of have sought that from 5 until like 31, and it's not working. I'm still in step 0.5, like 7 years into Alcoholics Anonymous when it comes to women. I have not and or been willing to completely give this one over to God. I mean, I've invited him in, I've communicated, I pray for the willingness, I curse him when it doesn't work, and I thank him when I get a little bit of hope that I think it's about to work. And then it doesn't work again, and then I curse him, and then I get hope, and then, you know, and I've just been on this fucking roller coaster for a really long time, and, you know, there's some things that I guess that are finally sinking in, and, I'm like 24 hours awake right now and delirious, and I just blah, you know, whatever, here it is. It's kind of like a marathon meeting for me right now, and I'm going to bed directly after I get out of here. But I don't have female friends. I've never maintained a relationship with a anywhere near attractive woman. If she was attractive, it was for this purpose, and if... You know, and I just don't, and I haven't, and I've been unwilling to, and I decided kind of this weekend and maybe a couple of weeks ago that, like, I'm going to talk to her, but I'm not going to ask her out. I'm going to talk to her, but I'm not going to get her number. I'm going to talk to her, but I'm not going to go back to see her. I'm going to be her friend. I'm going to be her friend. I'm going to be her friend. And it's like, I'm just trying to, like, force myself to, like, do that, and it's like, it's really fucking difficult, like... it's not what myself wants. It's not what my disease wants. It's just like, all I want so bad really is to just fill this whatever the fuck is so wrong inside of here with. She is not it. You know, and it's hurt, and it's hurt real bad. And going into 6 years of sobriety, I'm one of the people that ended up drinking over this. You know, luckily for these people that they haven't, I don't have that experience. I don't know what that's like to go through that pain without having to try to numb it. You know, and I'm back into sobriety again for like the second or third time and still doing the same shit that took me out the last two times, you know. So I don't know. I know that God's not going to perform a miracle for me, like, just because I come to this panel, like, poof, here, magic, you're good. You know, and a theme that's been reoccurring in my life lately is, like, I absolutely know that God will do for me what I can't do for myself, which for me has been keeping me sober, but he's not going to do for me what I can do for myself, you know, and I think that's, like, where I keep making the mistake, is, like, I forget that I'm the problem, and I make a decision to try to fill something with the wrong thing, and then I get really hurt, and it totally doesn't work for me. You know, so like what do I need to do is like I have to ask God just for the strength to simply stop seeking the wrong power, you know. And I wish it was easy, you know, I want it to be easy. You know, but so I don't know. I just wanted to share that before I get out of here. And I just want to thank everybody in here again for speaking on the panel. And we'll go ahead and we close with a prayer of my choice, I suppose.